All right, I'm here with Matt over at MSR. And tell me who you are and what you do at MSR.
Yeah, so I'm Matt Richardson. I'm a researcher here in MSR, and I work in the Machine Learning and Intelligence Group. I do machine learning and data mining. And recently I've been looking at social interaction, especially social question answering.
And so today we want to talk about I Am an Expert. And for people who don't know much about it, give us a little overview of it.
Yeah, sure. So I Am an Expert is a IAM-based social question answering system. It allows people to get answers to their questions in real time. And the basic idea is when you're in a large organization like Microsoft, there are a lot of people who have questions, who are looking for answers, and you can't always get the answer online. It may not be written down. And you know, usually the best way to get an answer is to find someone who just knows the answer. You know, it may take you hours to find the answer, but if you can find the right person, they can give it to you in a couple minutes. So we wanted to look at, you know, how can we facilitate people asking questions to each other and get the question routed to the right person. Right, so right now, you know, the way that this is usually solved is distribution lists, mailing lists, but then you're spamming 1,000 people with your question. Or you can post it to a sort of a web forum or something, but then you have to wait, you know, a few hours before anyone notices your question is there and gets your question answered. And so we wanted to look at a third approach, which is instant messaging-based question answering. So that's what I Am an Expert is. It lets you IM your question to our bot, and then the bot looks among the pool of users that it knows about and sends the question to those who it thinks are most likely to be able to answer the question. And then when it finds someone who's willing to answer the question for you, it connects you with them, and then you and that person can have a dialogue to get your question answered in real time. And the dialogue is convenient, actually, because a lot of times you ask a question and the answer needs to maybe ask some follow-up information, or maybe suggests, you know, try this, and then needs to see if that works, and then say try this, and so forth. And if you're doing this over email or through a web forum, there's a lot of latency, you know, from dialogue turn to dialogue turn, and so it can take a long time to get an answer to your question. So the IAM base sort of gives you a lot of benefits in terms of getting your question answered quickly, but also allowing us to sort of target the question just to people who we thought would be able to answer.
So how do you select what people at Microsoft who are part of this pool?
Yeah, so we wanted to design the system so that it was balanced. So anyone who wants to ask a question has to sort of sign up for the system and say, I'm also willing to answer questions when they come to me. And then it's just spread through word of mouth. We've told some friends about it. We sent it to a couple mailing lists, which gave us some initial growth. But then from there, people have just sort of talked about it, and it's spread. We now have over 3,000 employees using the system.
And this is built on Link?
Yeah, it's built on Link. We used UCMA 3.0, which is the API that Link uses to expose to managed code, expose this API to managed code.
So there's extensive documentation on the web, but can you give us an overview of the various components here?
Yeah. So the way we designed the system, we wanted it to be, you know, as configurable as possible. And there's also a lot of kind of components. So why don't I show on the whiteboard?
Okay.
So I mean, for starters, we have. For starters, we have our bot. This is the component that's basically receiving and sending IAMs to the users. So this person sort of sends in a question, and the bot is, you know, sending the question out to other users, and then facilitating dialogue between the users.
And it's not just any user. It's ones that it's predetermined that have a high degree of expertise in this area.
Yeah, that's right. So it's not only, so in addition to what you just said, it's users that it thinks are likely to have expertise in this area. It also will only send the question to users who are currently online and available. So if you're in a meeting or you're away from your desk, it's not going to bother sending you a question. And also the user has to have signed up for the system. So we're not sending it to random employees. You know, we don't want it to go to Steve Ballmer or something by a mistake. Someone has to sign up and say, I'm willing to answer questions. And as I mentioned, a lot of people have done that, so we have a nice large pool of people. So the bot basically needs to know who is going to be an expert. And so we have another component, which is effectively, we call it the expert finding component. You know, so the bot is going to send the question to the expert finding component, and that's going to send back a list of users, user one, user two, et cetera, who it thinks are the most likely to be able to answer the question. And how does this expert finding component know who to send the question to? It uses a number of sources of information about users. And these sources of information, they all come from, they're set up in the config file. So that if any administrator who's configuring this can add various sources of information. In particular, at Microsoft, we use what mailing lists people are subscribed to. We also use keywords and URLs that they specify in their profile on the web page, which I'll be showing later. And then we use other assorted information about the users. And the way, actually, I should redraw this diagram. The way this sort of works in practice, in terms of the components of the system, is there's a database, which is sort of the user sort of keyword database. And the expert finding algorithm just queries this and gets back, you know, what users are best. And we have a component, which is called the indexer. This is the guy who sort of slurps in all the information from all these different sources and sends it into this database. There's also the website. And I'll show on the screen a few web pages just so you can get an idea of what's there. But one of the things that you can do on the website is you can specify in your profile web pages that you think are things that you know about or talk about you. And because those are just URLs and we want them to get here into this indexed information, we have another component, which is the page crawler. Right, so the page crawler is effectively getting URL information from the database that backs the website, and it's sending it up to the indexer to go into this final index. And then we also effectively, another one of these sources to the indexer is the keywords coming out of the website. And then, you know, these are other sort of configured information. Another thing that we use within Microsoft is emails that people have sent to public distribution lists. So, you know, we've pre-crawled that, and so we have some other process which is putting that information in. And then we have one more component, which is a monitor. So, you know, you have all of these pieces running, and they may be running on different machines. The website and the page crawler and the indexer and the bot can be on five different machines, four different machines if you want, or they could all be on one machine. And, of course, you know, in the real world, machines occasionally reboot, they might crash, et cetera, et cetera. And so what the monitor does is it occasionally pings the bot and says, hey, are you awake, and is everything working okay? And the bot then goes out and does some diagnostic stuff. It'll issue a query to the expert finder, make sure that it gets some users back, and so forth. And then it'll respond to the monitor and say, you know, there's an error or there's no errors. And the monitor does this, you know, based on a configured periodic period. And if it finds a problem, then it'll email an administrator and say, you know, go check your system. You've got some issues. So this is kind of a rough idea of how they interrelate. Of course, you know, technically, they're mostly communicating through databases or other means, but this is roughly how they go together.
Excellent.
As I mentioned, you know, it's always hard to figure out how configurable you want to make something. So, you know, we could have tried to have everything just kind of be automated and give it out there and hope that the way we think it should be set up is the way that everyone wants it set up. But we took the other approach, which is that administrators and organizations differ, and their priorities differ. And so we wanted to make it as configurable as possible. But at the same time, to sort of ease the installation, we tried to give a lot of good defaults. And so in the documentation, it says, you know, these are the keys you're definitely going to have to change, like the password of the bot and things like that. But then other configurations, we're hoping, you know, you can generally leave them the same. And then if you want to tweak the system or make adjustments, then you can change the settings. So, you know, we have settings such as, you know, when the website or the bot or the monitor are sending emails, what is the, you know, URL of the website, things like that. The SIP address and port and username and password for the bot. So these are like basic sort of login type information. One of the things that we have is a messages file. And the messages file is everything that the bot ever says. And so that's completely configurable. So, you know, right now, if you type a really short word, it'll say, hey, is this a question? You know, questions must be at least two words long. If you wanted to run, you know, change that to say something in Spanish, or you want it to be funny, or you want it to be really serious, then you can change whatever the bot is saying by configuring the messages file. We have logging And then with the login again, we basically output all log entries in two paths. One is to the log file, we send everything. And then the other is to the console where you've run the bot. We'll send a subset of the information that you've said that you want. So for instance, the default setup we have is that all log things go to the log file, but only really important messages like the starting up and shutting down and errors and warnings will actually go to the console. And then we have various other configuration parameters, minimum number of question words, number of users to contact at once, and so forth. So you can see there's quite a few settings here. It looks a little overwhelming when you first look at it. But if you follow the install directions sort of step by step, then hopefully it won't be too overwhelming as you go through it.
So tell me about some of the main design considerations you had in creating this.
Yeah, so you know, I mentioned with the config file, you know, we wanted that to stay sort of configurable. Also, we, you know, when we started this project, we knew that we wanted to do something instant messaging based, but we didn't know exactly what platform we wanted to do that on. So we looked around, and we found Link has a really nice platform. The UCMA API is really pretty straightforward in most respects, and it really fit our needs, especially within enterprises. Within Microsoft, it's deployed to all employees, and then you know, in other organizations, that's true as well. So that's why we chose Link. Another thing that we did is we opted when the questioner or the answer, after the questioner has sent the question, and the answer has said yes, I'm willing to respond, willing to help this person. We could have just connected those people directly to each other and kind of stepped out of the way, but we opted instead to stay in the middle and route messages back and forth from questioner to answer. So the questioner is always talking to us, and the answer is always talking to us, and they never actually know who each other are specifically, unless in their profile they say that they're willing to reveal that. So that allowed us to do things like allow people to stay anonymous. If some people want to be able to ask a question but not know who asked the question, or answer a question and not know who answered the question. It also lets us record the entire conversation. So on the website, for example, this is the website. This is sort of, you know, our user growth and so forth. But we have a questions page where you can see, you know, what are all the questions that have been asked of the system over the last, you know, 30 days or whatever. At the end of the question, you can rate from 1 to 5 how good the answer was. And so these are the ratings. And then you can do things like search, like we could search for Link and see, you know, what were all the previous questions on Link. So this would let someone just see, you know, rather than asking the question, they could come here and see if it looks interesting, if it matches the question. And then if you click on a question, then you can see the actual discussion that happened between the asker and the answer. So in this case, both the asker and the answer wanted to stay anonymous, but they didn't mind if their content was shared with everybody. So that's an example of the questions page. And then, as I mentioned, there's the profile page. On my profile page, I can specify URLs about me or keywords about things that I know about. And then there's a variety of restrictions, such as minimum amount of time between questions, maximum number of questions a day. We have a concept of groups. So if people want to just ask questions within their group, then they can do that. And then also things about anonymity and so forth. Also, you know, if a user wants to come here and just suspend their participation for 8 hours, they can do that if they have a busy work day and they don't want to be bothered.
So folks at MSR are an analytical bunch. You must have collected some data. Can you tell us a little bit about your findings?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we've actually published a few papers regarding I Am an Expert. Most of the findings, you know, we wanted to compare IM-based question answering to email-based and web forum question answering. And one of the findings that we did is we asked for, you know, volunteers across Microsoft. And we got 400 people to volunteer, and we split them into groups of people who would ask questions through I Am an Expert, people who would use distribution lists, and people who would use web forums. And we found that in these different groups, they didn't know about each other. In these different groups, the people using I Am an Expert got their questions answered in 3 minutes on average, as opposed to 30 minutes on mailing lists and 3 hours on web forums. So we were, you know, happy with the speed of answering. And then also the answer quality is very high. So that, you know, they rate it on a scale from 1 to 5, and the average rating right now is 4.7. So people are very happy with the answer. And also IM-based question answering, because it only contacts a few people at a time, it doesn't end up interrupting a lot of people. In this case, it interrupts about 8 people on average for a given question, whereas, you know, distribution lists, of course, can, you know, interrupt up to, you know, many hundreds
thousands
or
of people,
thousands
yeah.
of people or whatever. And then also it was interesting because we split the people into different groups, different size groups. So we looked to see what happens if there's just 25 people, 50 people, or 100 people in each of these situations. And for the IM-based question answering, as the pool size increased, everything went up. The time to answer went down, and the quality of the answer and everything else went up. And so, you know, we expect, and we've seen as the pool has grown within Microsoft, that the more and more people you have using the system, the better the system can do. And that's because it can really find those experts. In fact, I was gonna show just really quickly how it goes through the expert expert list. Once it knows who, I'm just gonna erase part of this. Once it knows who it wants to send the question to, it sends it to a few people sort of in parallel. So, and that's a user configurable thing. But suppose the setting is two, okay? Then, and we have a list of user A, B, C, D, and E are the people that we're going to contact. Then it'll first contact A and B right away, immediately. And then as it'll wait, and if one of these people says no, I can't help, then it'll just go down and contact the next person right away. And then maybe B, if B hasn't responded within a certain amount of time, which we've by default I think set to 45 seconds or 30 seconds, but it's also configurable, then it'll just go down to the next person again in line. And so you always sort of have these few pending people, and this setting here, this width by which you're sending it to people, affects things such as how quickly you can get your answer, because you're going to send it to more people at once, but then also how many people you're interrupting for a given question.
And is the 45 seconds for a full written answer, or is that for them to start typing and
that's for them to say, so the mode that we went with is that they say yes. So we say, here's the question, are you willing to help? And what they do is they say yes. If they say, like, if C says yes, then we go and we tell B and D, we don't need you anymore. You know, mm-hmm. thanks for helping, but we don't need you. And then we just have C talk to the asker.
Excellent.
This is something that we've been considering for future versions, is to allow actually maybe a conference between anyone who was a willing answer or participant. Mm-hmm. But we found in the studies that actually a low value here, such as 2, gives the best trade-off between what askers want, which is a quick answer, and what answerers want, which is to not be interrupted too much. And so I think the default shipping one is 3, but somewhere around 2 to 3 is a good number.
Great.
Yeah.
And where do people find more information on this?
Well, you can search using Bing for I Am an Expert or any other search engine.
And we'll link to it in the post.
We'll also link to it in the description of the video.
Excellent. Thank you, Matt. Thanks for telling us about this.
Great.